I'm Katie, riding the number 11 bus on Lincoln Avenue, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Enjoy that bus ride. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 952. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson, he is at his post on duty today in the WGN radio studio as our engineer. So hello to Bob. And again, it is great to be here with you today. Thanks for joining the show. So here we are into the new year, and we've got a good show coming up for you today. We get an update on a local organization called Hello Baby. They do some wonderful work with young children on the south side of Chicago, and they're getting a cash infusion in order to expand their work. Also, city finances when it comes to TIF districts. What's happening with that issue currently? We explore that. And are we in dark civic times? Some would say, yep. We explore that question and dive into the concept of servant leadership, as well as civic organizing to achieve goals. Civic life. You know, in that conversation, I think there's an element of the necessity of a free press to speak truth to power and to inform all of us. You probably saw that Facebook decided this week to end their fact-checking program. Why is this a big deal? Well, according to Pew Research, about one-third of Americans get their news from Facebook. And I've talked about this on Outside the Loop before, but this is in part a result of the decline of local journalism, especially in rural communities across the country. If there aren't local newspapers around, folks fill the void with information from social media. Now, I don't think that the fact-checking system on Facebook was going to save democracy or anything, but it was something. It's important to remember that, yeah, while it's great that free speech exists online, not all of it is journalism. Journalists are trained to tell the story of what happened and to give us the essential information we need to understand current issues. And most of what is posted online most definitely isn't coming from journalists. So what are we going to do? Well, the Washington Post editorial page had some advice for us earlier this week. They said, quote, "The number one way to avoid falling for posts circulating on social media is to consider how it makes you feel. If it elicits a strong emotional reaction like anger, anxiety, fear, or even glee, that's a sign it may be untrue. Take a beat and investigate," end quote. That's good advice. Do you remember Reverend Mitchell Johnson? Wait, who, you're asking? Think all the way back to October of 2024, when Mayor Johnson, no relation, appointed the Reverend as president of the Chicago Board of Education. Shortly after his appointment, past social media posts of the Reverend surfaced. These contained anti-Semitic comments, misogynistic posts, and conspiracy theories about 9/11. Not great. Hate speech, conspiracy theories, this garbage spreads way too easily today and is consumed with ease by the masses. And the CTA must really be fed up with all this because they just bowed out of Twitter. Wait a minute, do you call it X? Really? Do you? Come on. But apparently the CTA isn't fed up with the lack of fact-checking. They said, quote, "This social media platform no longer provides the value it once did for us to effectively reach and communicate with our writers," end quote. Really? They had 287,000 followers on Twitter, and it was a great way to communicate any issues trains and buses were having. The CTA still maintains its presence on other social media platforms like Facebook, Threads, and Blue Sky. The last two, I am still unsure about what they are and how they actually work. The CTA probably needs new leadership, right? Yep. Step one, just get back on Twitter, okay? All right, well, look, civic life. Here we are. We're in it. Double check those social media posts and strap in for today's show. listeners to this show know that for years, literally years, I've talked about TIF districts in Chicago. These tax increment financing districts are intended for blighted areas of the city, and they capture the incremental increase of property taxes within the boundary of each district. The money captured goes into a special TIF fund that is controlled by the mayor, and ideally, the money goes to improvements within the TIF district, but it doesn't always work out that way. The Chicago City Council is allowing 13 TIF districts to expire, and that means the money that will be freed up needs somewhere to go. Mayor Johnson is eyeing this money in order to build affordable housing, new commercial buildings, and issue small business loans. Tom Tresser is a civic educator and public defender. He's also an author, and he is an expert on TIF districts. And spoiler alert, he doesn't like them. We should check out Tresser.com, T-R-E-S-S-E-R. Hey, man, it is always great to talk to you, Tom.
Thanks so much, Mike. I'm sort of chortling here. Spoiler alert. Yeah, your listeners are like running for the hills. And so that's Tresser guy again. He's like some old man who's yelling to the kids to get off their lawn. It's like, get off the TIF lawn, please. But yes, well, you speak true.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Tom. The getting off the TIF lawn here. It sounds like, I don't know, this is kind of happening. It sounds like the city is doing something that you've been advocating for a long time. What are your thoughts on what's happening here with this expiration of TIF districts?
Yeah, it's to me, it's a good omen. I'd like to see them all expire or abolish and not renewed or extended, which is what they are doing. Including the Pilsen TIF, which wants to be doubled in size. And there's a huge fight in Pilsen, and I'm part of that. The neighbors down there do not want that to happen. The alderman there is pushing it against the wishes of the people. So it's a tension. Bottom line, TIFs are racist and corrupting. They are not a good deal for the city or for the neighborhood where they're put. I don't care what they're told. They have nothing to do with economic development. It's all about clout. So to answer your question, yes, anything that makes a TIF go away, I am so for it. But it's a little more nuanced than that. What the Johnson administration is proposing, they want to borrow against the revenues that will be coming in. And that's taking us back to the payday loan store. And I don't understand Mayor Johnson. I thought he was a progressive. Don't take us to the payday loan store, Mayor Johnson. If you want to build something, and we do need things to be built, like new libraries, new parks, clinics. You know, we're still behind on the public health thing, and of course, affordable housing.
Right.
But we have an organization that's dedicated to that. It's called the Chicago Housing Authority. The last time I checked, it's got a couple $100 million budget. I have no idea what they're doing. They're certainly not building affordable housing. So, to my friends out there who are fighting for housing and fighting for these other public goods, do not go to the TIF payday loan store. It's a bad deal. And so what I've been telling anyone who will ask is create a citywide shopping list, ward by ward, by listening to what the people want, by community meetings, and develop your list. We need gardens. We need the school repaired. We need parks. We need the red line extended. We're still waiting for that, by the way, 40 years on. So, I mean, if you just listen, so you would, go to 50 meetings or whatever number of meetings, and you'd have people flooding you with emails. But basically, an alderman or a mayor would be able to understand within a few months kind of what the people are saying they need, not what you're telling them they need.
So, okay. I mean, hey, look, your plan sounds awesome.
That's right.
It's super simple.
It's free. It's take it and run with it.
Right. So the money we're saying here, the money that's being freed up as these TIF districts expire, we could use this, but I just want to dive into the plan that we mentioned that is coming out of the mayor's office here. And I can't quite get it either. I don't understand. So we're thinking that we're still going to borrow money.
Yes.
And then use the TIF money that is from these expiring districts that's being freed up to pay what, interest on that?
Yeah. So we've got 124 active TIFs, and last year they extracted $1.2 billion. So it says $1.2 billion of property taxes did not reach their final destinations, which are schools, the county, the libraries. It's the game that I've been tracking for 12 years. So that's $1.2 billion that didn't serve the public. They're sitting in these TIF accounts, and the mayor can do whatever he wants with them. I mean, some of it is contractually obligated for projects underway. And at the end of 2023, there was a staggering $3 billion sitting in the TIF accounts. So this is what the mayor is playing with. He wants to use some of that. So if a TIF is expired or if he cancels it prematurely, whatever money is sitting in the little piggy bank there, that must be redistributed to all the units of government that should have gotten that money in the first place. So if we were to take all the TIF money sitting in the TIF accounts that I've asserted was present at the end of 2023, that's $3 billion.
Yeah.
If he had pulled the plug then, the Board of Ed would have gotten about 56% of that, you know, so that's $1.8 billion or more or less. And the city, 10%, the county, 5%, whatever, you know, everybody gets their percentage as a one-time spend. Now, what he's saying is a much smaller version of that. And the city's portion, he would then be using to pay back these bonds that he's presumably seeking to acquire with which to do these projects that you mentioned, you know, housing and services. But it's so circuitous. It's so costly. The article that you mentioned in the Tribune, you know, buried the lead, you know, four pages in, it says the $1.25 billion that the mayor wishes to use for these good purposes will cost us $2.4 billion. You know what? I'll let me do the deal.
You
know, that's 100%. Okay. So is there anybody out there who thinks, you know, let me put it this way. If I issue you a credit card, Mike, you need $100. I'll give you the $100. You give me $200 back. You ready to,
let's go. Yeah. Right.
Let's go.
Right.
Well, that's what he's saying. And I'm just saying to the people of Chicago, wise up. You know, if you want these things, and I think we want them and we deserve them, whether it's affordable housing or better public health or that red line extension so we don't have to wait another friggin' 40 years, all those are meritorious things. I'm all for them. All I've been saying in most of my adult life is I don't want to go to the payday loan store, and I don't want it to be driven by location. That's another point that the article makes. Again, way deep in the article, it mentions that these physical improvements funded by TIFs can only happen where the robust TIF is. So if you're in a poor part of the city and you need some of this good public stuff, this ain't going to help you. So that's part of, I mean, this argument never grows old or it's never going to change. I'm just waiting for the day that somebody just says enough. Pull the plug.
So with the TIFs here, I mean, if we have to like tie this all together, I suppose you're saying that it's good that they are expiring, but in terms of what we do with the money and how we sort of plug our short term thirst for money and our need for money, I understand the city needs it, right? The way that we're going about that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we're going to have a bunch of money and then
it's expensive.
We could use this money better is what you're saying.
Yeah. And remember, I wrote a book called Chicago Is Not Broke, Funding the City We Deserve. And that has $5 billion in sustainable revenue sources. That were sustainable and progressive, meaning they don't run out. They don't ding the poor person. The principle is the rich pay more. And there's some good government fixes that we just haven't gotten around to, like ending police corruption, canceling TIFs, a progressive income tax for the state of Illinois, which is, again, beyond just our gift here in the city. But I would have argued, we've had this conversation many times, and I would say the mayor, whoever he or she was, should have been the leader of the state movement to get the fair tax amendment. It would have helped Chicago a great deal. You know, it would help the whole state. But again, we're kind of, you know, we're micro-focused, we're siloed, and our civic imagination is stunted to the point of atrophy. And we just keep coming back to this payday loan store. That's really all they got. And I'm so sick and tired of it.
So what we're talking about here today, okay, we're talking about TIFs. We've talked about that. And, you know, this kind of gets into a bigger topic that you have been thinking about and writing about. And you are a civic educator, right? So something you've advocated for years is more engagement in civic life, people getting educated about the issues and then taking action in the public sphere. And you have said to me that we are in dark civic times. Why is that? Why is that the case?
Well, we just elected a psychopathic, white supremacist, rapist felon to the presidency who has said that he will be an autocrat. I mean, and apparently the majority of Americans who voted are okay with that. That's frightening and nauseating for someone who spent his entire adult life advocating for people to get involved in public life, to lead from the heart, to lead with a heart of service, you know, to lead believing in, oh, I don't know, science.
You know? Sure, sure.
There's such a thing as a germ. If I sneeze on you, it's not good for you. I shouldn't be sneezing on you. You know what I mean? I should cover my mouth.
We shouldn't be debating that, right?
But we are debating it, you know. Whether I should get a, whether if you send your child to school that they're going to get vaccinated and they don't infect their fellow children with measles or smallpox, that we're going backwards to the 1830s. Businesses unfettered to do whatever the heck they want, no regulation, no taxes. This is the world that Trump and his cronies want. So that's what I say, dark civic times. And this conversation that we're having could be illegal.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
in a matter of weeks, the NSA could be weaponized. That every conversation, every time I type something, I'm sending an email, you know, to register to vote, or I say something critical, I could get a call from the FBI.
Right,
they come knocking on your door. People, this is for real, real. And so that's why I'm distressed, and I blame. Part of the blame, I blame my friends, my colleagues in the nonprofit world who have been, I don't know, laboring for decades in the world of service and study, but not power. The far right has been all about getting power and getting to the table of governance, putting their beliefs into law and then into budgets and into judicial appointments. So it's one thing to say, I believe women are inferior, blacks are inferior, white people are better, you shouldn't have an abortion. That's my opinion. But then I have put a civic architecture together to translate my arcane and dark beliefs into law that affects you. And you have stayed home studying it. You know, the left has written about it and you don't like it and you've had a conference. Oh, you've had so many conferences.
Yeah.
You know, so many papers. You've written so many papers. Oh, my God. So you are the expert on these things, but you have not figured out a path to power. And when someone like me comes rapping at your door or harping at you, you like brush me away like I'm a stalker or something. And so what I've been saying to my peers is you need to run for office, or you need to help someone run and get them into the space of power and governance and translate your values and ideas into the laws of the land, because that's what the other side has done for 70 years. And I've been tracking them, you know, for at least 30 of those 70 years, pretty assiduously.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you something about this, Tom, because, you know, you've written about this, you've talked about this, but what we're seeing here, you're talking about, you know, sort of one end of the political spectrum and how the idea of government has been really degraded. You know, you hear this message, and we heard it a lot in the election, that government needs to be smaller. Government is the enemy. And I'm not denying that, hey, look, it can be inefficient. I get that. Are there redundancies? Sure, I can acknowledge all that. But, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, we have some of these incoming picks to lead some of these big government agencies, and they are openly hostile to those agencies, like the Education Department, the FBI, the CIA. So you're saying here, this concept of servant leadership, you're saying, hey, look, let's not run away from the government. Let's be a part of it. And I want you just briefly here, can you explain what you're talking about, trying to get us involved in the process and be servant leaders?
Yeah, so servant leader seeks to serve first, to serve and solve and heal. So you're driven into service because of your heart, what I call your civic heart. And you're a generous, caring person. You care about people you don't know. And so many people have that tendency, you know, I mean, people in the clergy are certainly that way, but many, many people in the nonprofit world enter the nonprofit world to serve. Okay, that is a good thing. And in many ways, people in America are generous because they volunteer and they donate money. Last year, over $517 billion was donated through nonprofits. So that's the good side of the American character. But the thing that drives me crazy is it doesn't get translated necessarily into an architecture of power so you can govern according to those servant leader values. So you seek to serve first, and then you aspire to lead. And the beauty of the servant leader model is it's the people who are being led grant you, the leader, the authority to lead. And they may withdraw it if you crap out on them. So and Martin Luther King said, you know, the servant lead in this model, it says you don't need a PhD and you don't need to have your participles match your predicates, you know, to right, be a leader. Right. He said all you need is the heart of a servant. And that's what I believe. And so what I've been saying to our colleagues in the nonprofit sector, you know, you have that heart and you also have a lot of knowledge, whether it's about healthcare or the environment or the arts or whatever it is you're doing. But now you've got to go into public life and be a city council person or be a county commissioner or be a president. And don't forget your craziness as an artist or a jazz player or a designer or a scientist or an educator, whatever. Well, you did. Those are the skills that you need. Bring those with you. Don't run from them. And serve. Because these are the people who actually, you know, believe in science and they, you know, they believe in getting evidence. And so what I'm saying is 100,000 people, this is in the Nonprofit Quarterly, by the way, but the link is also on my website. You can read it there. I'm calling for 100,000 people from our sector to run for office in 2026 and 2028. So I don't have all the answers, clearly, but my feeling is the other side has been carefully crafting a plan to seize power at all levels of government, training people, equipping them, staying with them, helping them, you know, backing them up, mentoring them through various agencies and entities that I've been tracking. And we need to do the same. That's basically what I'm saying. So if you're a librarian out there, you're a teacher out there, you're a scientist out there, put down your test tube, think about running for office.
So says Tom Tresser. This really is an important conversation when we talk about, you know, we're talking about issues of the economic development of Chicago and the situation in Chicago, but also just general civic engagement and civic life. We need caring people who want to serve. I believe that especially now. And Tom, I know that you have so many thoughts on this, and I'm sure we'll be doing this again. Tom Tresser, civic educator and public defender. Tresser.com is the website. Tom also wrote a book, Chicago is Not Broke. We should check that out as well. Hey, man, it's always such a pleasure talking with you. And, you know, next time, don't hold back. Maybe you just want to get fired up next time. Is that okay?
I know. You bring it out of me, Mike. Look what I tell you. I don't know what you're asking me the right questions, or I don't know. I just had a spare rib for dinner or something. I'm feeling feisty. I don't know what it is. But I thank you again, my friend, for asking the questions. And I hope your listeners appreciate you. And everybody should go to your website and give you a thumbs up right away.
April of last year on this program, we heard from Debbie Frisch. She is the founder and executive director of Hello Baby. That is the nation's first freestanding, free of charge, drop-in play space for babies, toddlers, and their caregivers. They're located right here in Chicago, 600 East 61st Street in the Woodlawn neighborhood. And it was announced recently that Hello Baby is receiving $25,000 to build an outdoor play space featuring a butterfly garden set to open later in 2025. The money from this comes from the Leva Family Foundation. Debbie is here with us once again. Debbie, it's nice to talk to you. Welcome to Outside the Loop again.
It's so great to be back with you. Thank you.
You got it. And also from the Leva Family Foundation, the president of that organization and the CEO and co-owner of Our Way Confections and Long Grove Confectionery, Craig Leva. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's nice to have you both here. So lots happening here. And hey, it's some good news. So Debbie, just refresh our memory here. So the need for an organization like Hello Baby, which again is a place where people can drop in with their babies and toddlers and just play. Why did you start this back in 2017?
Well, it came from my history as a foster mother, and I'd had 56 kids in care, most babies under a year old, but up to 5 years old. And I'd get some of these kids, and I do not think this is the fault of the family at all. Families are really stretched thin these days, but I could tell they'd probably been in a car seat in front of a screen for most of their time. So I'd get them out of the car seat. I'd put them on the play mat. They didn't know what to do with it. They didn't like it. Their muscle tone was really bad. They were developmentally behind, but I could catch them up, you know, in about 5 weeks. And when they went on their way, they were at developmentally appropriate milestones. And so I thought, instead of the babies coming into my home one at a time, maybe it's my turn to go where the need is the greatest. So I thought, this is really the most obvious idea in the world. The government's pretty much focused on kindergarten, some on pre-K, but we know that birth to three is such an important time for brain growth and development. And it really sets you up for lifelong success if you can reach children during this time.
Yeah, you're so right. And I know that your particular focus has been in communities that maybe are underserved. And certainly in Chicago, I mean, here we are in this place that has a history of that, unfortunately, for a variety of reasons. But we know that there is gross inequality in Chicago across the city. So you're focusing on those communities. And basically, I mean, this is a place where adults can bring their toddlers and their babies and they can just play. And you have all kinds of resources there.
Right. And we know play is the work of childhood. That's how children learn. They're not going to get that from a screen. And there's whole big areas of our city. We call them play deserts. And just like you've heard of food deserts, lack of access to healthy food, there just aren't safe, appropriate places for children to play. So our goal is to really work on eliminating play deserts in Chicago. We've got one under our belt, and we've bought our second location. And that's where the Leva Family Foundation is so generously putting in the outside garden, the butterfly garden.
Right. And that's very exciting. And Craig, let's bring you into this conversation here. I mean, you as someone who's in a position to do this, to donate this money to expand the work of Hello Baby, how did you get involved with this organization? What was it that made you say, hey, I need to take a second look at this? This is really great work.
Well, for me, I started our foundation in 2016, and it was really at the time when that Chicago was on fire with all the violence. I mean, we've seen a spike in that again. But at the time, you know, looking around, it's like, who's doing something about what is going on in our inner city? And, you know, a lot of conversations later kind of got me involved in, some of the space around some of the violence prevention groups in Chicago. And, you know, what can I do as an individual to be impactful or to help in some way that, you know, makes it better. And in my journey of, you know, kind of finding pockets of where I might be able to help, I was introduced to Debbie and to Hello Baby, and actually got to see firsthand, you know, not only what she does, but where she does it and how she does it and who she does it for. There's probably very few listeners right now who have passed by the space, but this space is just beautiful. Anybody from, you know, whether you're extremely well off or whether you're living in squalor, this place that is established is just super nice and comfortable with amazing resources doing great work. And so it's easy to want to be involved, especially after I was able to witness, you know, what is being done in this space and for the people that she's serving.
And you talk about violence prevention, and, you know, I think a lot of us feel the way that you do. And luckily, you're in a great position where financially you can do this with your foundation. But, you know, we talk about violence prevention, and boy, it's coming down to these early years. Like Debbie was saying, the work of childhood is play. And to be able to provide an opportunity for very young children to just play and develop and go on to hopefully have, you know, opportunities down the line because of that healthy development, you know, that's going to pay out dividends, I think, later on. And so, Craig, what you're saying here, you know, violence prevention, if we have a situation where these families are in a good spot and there's play and there's development and there's growth, I mean, this could even affect that down the road.
Well, there's a lot of things that go into the, you know, to the violence piece. But if you think about, you know, some of the living conditions, especially, you know, on the south and west side of the city, there's not a lot of clean spaces to play. And so this is really, it's a great oasis for, you know, for any toddler to spend time, or even an oasis for an adult to be away spending time in this space. And certainly, you know, it all can help, you know, lead to, you know, better toddlers grow into better children, who grow into better young adults, who grow into better adults. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And yes, I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that, you know, I have resources and I want to help and I do my best. But I feel like in our world, you know, everybody's waiting for, you know, the government to do something, or the mayor's office to do something, or for some, you know, charitable organization. I think it's up to all of us. You know, everybody plays a part in violence prevention, whether we realize it or not. So, you know, for the people who feel like, I don't make any money, I what can I do? You know, everybody can lend their time, everybody can volunteer, everybody can be more empathetic. You know, everybody can give something, you know, even a part of themselves, as in terms of how you show up. I'm lucky that I have resources that I can also put behind it and feel that I can make real impact when I'm making an investment in something like this.
Yeah. Debbie, let's talk about the expansion here and how you're growing Hello Baby. So we have this plan here that, you know, it's on the horizon when it comes to this expansion and building an outdoor play space, this butterfly garden. Tell us what's on deck here.
Well, we bought a building. We rented the first time. It's about double the size of what we have now, which is small. You know, we've got about 1,000 feet now. This is about 2,000. But it comes with a parking lot, which will be lovely, and a green space. And right now we're using a space across the street that our neighbors at Blacks and Green own, and they generously let us use for our fairy garden. But with Craig's gift, we're going to be able to put in a year-round nature garden, butterfly garden, that the kids can enjoy all the time. And another thing that happens in play deserts and in the inner cities is kids don't have access to outdoor play. And Craig is so generously supporting this, and it's in honor of his sister-in-law and his mother-in-law, who loved butterflies, and he can talk more about that.
Yeah, there's a little connection there with your family, Craig, about why the butterfly garden.
You know, the butterfly has just been a symbol of, you know, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law both passed away in the last few years. And there's been a lot of grief in our family. And the butterfly has been symbolic for us in terms of memory, but connection. It's something that, you know, if you came over to my house, you couldn't count the number of butterflies on, you know, different pictures and vases and, you know, little tchotchkes all over, hidden around. So the butterfly has always been very symbolic, and you know, honestly, if I can combine something that, you know, serves to the memory of my sister-in-law and my mother-in-law, who are just, you know, fantastic human beings and both taken away too early, and combine that with an organization that's making real impact, doing great work, and feeling like the dollar spent will do, you know, good for many, many years to come, it just feels like a great landing spot to make a nice investment for this to happen.
Now, that is wonderful. And Debbie, I said later this year that this is going to be all happening. So tell us where this second location is and when we can expect this to be open.
We're at 8507 South Stony Island. Perkins and Will is again generously donating the design services for us pro bono. It's going to mimic all the features of what we have in the Woodlawn location. So I want people, when they come in and say, oh, this is home, I am home. We've learned a lot from Woodlawn. We've learned our supplies were always robust, but they became more robust, our supply donations during the pandemic. So we're going to have some extra room for that, because we really want to continue to support our families, especially with the increasing wealth disparity that we're seeing. Some families are really struggling. So we help with diapers and wipes and clothing and hygiene supplies. And then for the kids, we always send enrichment home, you know, books, crafts, toys, puzzles. So we'll be able to continue to do that the way we are and just have a little more space to play.
This is really wonderful news. And we can check out the website, hellobabychgo.org, for Hello Baby Chicago. It is the nation's first freestanding, free of charge, drop-in play space for babies, toddlers, and their caregivers. And it's expanding with a little help from the Leva Family Foundation. That's awesome. Craig Leva is the president of that foundation, also the CEO and co-owner of Our Way Confections and Long Grove Confectionery, and Debbie Frisch, the founder and executive director of Hello Baby. This is a great story. You're both doing wonderful work, and I'm happy that we can get the word out about it. So thanks for talking to us today, and hey, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mike.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 952 is done. I say thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks, of course, to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. You, yes, you, I want you to have a wonderful week, and I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.